Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage. You are listening to episode 6. Thank you so much for joining us. Unfortunately, my wonderful co-host Drew was unable to join me this week for the podcast. He had a scheduling conflict, but I have a very exciting interview with a filmmaker today, so let's jump right in. So today, what is the movie we are discussing? It is called Kelly's Hollywood. It is a documentary created by a filmmaker named Brian Donovan. So who is this filmmaker? He has a sister named Kelly, and he has made a documentary basically about her life. And it's very personal to me because Kelly is a person with Down syndrome, and she is very full of energy and has lots of dreams and aspirations. And you may not know this, but October is actually Down Syndrome Awareness Month. So I thought this was the perfect film to discuss for this month. This is, as I mentioned, a personal topic to me. I have two children with Down syndrome, and so advocacy for on their behalf and on behalf of all people with Down syndrome is something that's very near and dear to my heart. My wife was connected to this filmmaker and this film at a conference she was attending, and I thought, wow, I need to try to get a hold of that guy. I went ahead and broke this interview into two pieces. The first half, we talk mostly about the film and filmmaking, and the second half, we get more into the advocacy talk. You know, I try to keep these episodes a half hour-ish in length, and this interview was too good to cut off, so we just kept talking and talking, and I thought this will be a good two-parter. So in this first half, we are going to talk about what it's like to make a documentary, what it's like to make a documentary about something so personal, and how Brian got this film together. Brian is one of the nicest people I've ever met, and you'll get a sense of that as you listen. But we dig into a lot of great details about the movie, where you can watch it, and I'll address that at the end of the episode as well. For a little bit more information about Brian Donovan, here is a chunk of his bio. Brian Donovan is the director and producer of the award-winning documentary Kelly's Hollywood, which we are discussing today, currently streaming on Showtime. The film is a very personal portrait of his relationship with his sister Kelly, who was born with Down syndrome. One of his greatest joys has been screening and speaking about the film across the USA, creating awareness and advocating for those with special needs. He also created and produced the children's self-empowerment show, Mighty Me Training Camp, a top title on Discovery Education, streaming from 2008 to 2012. Brian has worked as an actor for almost 30 years in hundreds of commercials and voiceovers, as well as dozens of film and television projects with such Hollywood luminaries as Angelina Jolie, Jim Carrey, Gabriel Byrne, and Jim Belushi. Television roles include the award-winning Gia, Beverly Hills 90210, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and Wings. Currently, he is every kid's taijutsu hero, Rock Lee, in the world-famous anime series, Naruto. In addition, Brian is the executive director of the nonprofit Los Angeles Repertory Theater, providing inner-city youth with performing arts workshops. He directed and produced their educational documentary, You Got Issues, about one of their critically acclaimed workshops. Brian lives with his family and dog, Cosmo, in Los Angeles, California. So what is this movie about? It is about Kelly. She's the main character. And this is Brian Donovan's sister. And Kelly is so full of life. It starts with her as a young, from her birth, and kind of goes through their childhood and through her struggles as it pertains to Down syndrome, but really just as it pertains to humanity. She and Brian have an incredibly close relationship, and he really advocates for her well, and he spends a lot of time trying to help her realize her dreams. And I think that's one of the greatest things about it, is that you see people with Down syndrome have dreams just like everyone else. Basically, anyone who watches this movie is going to just fall in love with Kelly. She is an amazing person. A secondary sort of story that comes into this is Brian and his relationships with women. Basically, he has girlfriends through the years, and his relationship with his sister is so close that, and she doesn't require attention of him, but they are so close that she gets most of his attention, basically, and that causes a lot of conflict with his female relationships through the years. So you watch that play out as well, and the whole movie culminates with, you know, Kelly has this dream. She loves the movies. She loves Hollywood and the whole culture around that, and she has this dream of being a Hollywood diva. And Brian lives in Hollywood as an actor, and she visits him frequently. And basically, the film culminates with this big event that Brian throws for his sister. It is she gets to be the star of the show, and you can see this in the trailer. But that's kind of the big event at the end of this, and it's incredibly emotional to watch and just a really, really special thing. And I'm just so thankful that this was documented, that other people can know about what happened that night and all the context surrounding that too. Truly an amazing movie. When I first heard about this, and I addressed this with Brian too, I kind of thought, okay, here's a low budget documentary about kind of a niche subject, and maybe I shouldn't expect too much from it, but it really blew me away, and I think it will for anyone, not just if you have a connection to this world. So, without further ado, here is my interview with Brian Donovan. We are here with Brian Donovan, a filmmaker and advocate, and I'm so excited to have him here. Thank you for joining us, Brian.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here, and looking forward to talking all things movies.
Yeah, absolutely. So I recently had the pleasure of watching Brian's film, Kelly's Hollywood, about his sister with Down syndrome. And this is very personal to me because I have two children with Down syndrome. And my wife had met him at a conference, and I was excited to, when she was like, she got on the phone with me. He's like, I met the coolest guy. You gotta hear about this movie. He gave me a copy. I was really excited to watch it. And since then, I was just thrilled to see, like, what is this thing? And she brought it home, and we watched it and loved it. So that is the exciting guest we have today. But I will say this, and this will lead into kind of my first question, is I first heard, okay, it's this really cool documentary, and I saw the trailer, and I think at some point along the way, someone said, yeah, it's kind of this low-budget documentary. And I think when I heard that, I sort of tempered my expectations to think, okay, it's low budget, first time filmmaker, you know, maybe I shouldn't expect too much, basically. But I wish I had not done that, because it really took me on an emotional journey more than I expected. And I do, of course, have the bias of having two kids with Down syndrome, but it pulled me along from the very beginning. And I'm curious to hear, what kind of reactions have you heard from people that otherwise may not have much of a connection with the Down syndrome community?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's funny that you mentioned the low budget aspect, because you know, I think that was one of the obstacles I faced. You know, because, I mean, for your listeners, just a little backstory. You know, I started shooting my sister, I guess, very loosely with a little consumer camera back in 98. And then, you know, into, you know, 2001, 2003, you know, kind of, and it wasn't until 2003 that I got a little more serious about actually documenting her and thought, oh, there might be something here. There's a story here I've never really seen before. And so, to your point of the low budget, it really reflects that, you know, this was camcorder stuff. It was way before HD. And or certainly, you know, consumer camera HD, you know, so I kept it in a 4:3 frame for your filmmaker fans, and you know, it was a choice I made, because 80% of my footage was 4:3, and so, yeah, it's got this very, you know, kind of this very home movie look to it. And I think that, you know, really troubled, you know, when I was trying to get festival circuit stuff and even someone that was very interested in buying it for distribution. But I think in the end, they got nervous and didn't pull the trigger, so to speak, because of the 4:3 framing, and because of, you know, most of it was this, you know, camcorder SD stuff, transferred HD. And you know, and really, to full circle, the aspect of distribution, just to your point of the low budget, you know, I really credit Showtime, who ultimately picked it up and distributed it, and give them a lot of credit for really taking that leap, and also taking the leap of the more universal themes of the film, which brings us, you know, really full circle to your question about, you know, how has a general audience reacted to the film. And, you know, for a long time, I wasn't even, you know, I wasn't sure if I was just making a really expensive glorified home movie, you know, so I wasn't sure, you know, if it would translate. I wasn't sure if the spirit of my sister or even our relationship interest anyone in a film. I knew my sister's spirit was remarkably contagious while she was alive and when she entered the room. And our relationship was, I think, was generally special to witness to our friends and otherwise, because we were so close. But I wasn't sure if any of that would translate to film. And so I was working on it. And, you know, and I just kept going because I knew it was a story I needed to tell, you know, ultimately for myself. But yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, needless to say, the obvious niche demographic market audience is anyone tied to disability in some way, shape, or form. But of course, in true filmmaker fashion, you want your film to be recognized and accepted and appreciated by the masses and by the general, you know, more general audience. And what I've come to find, you know, with Showtime, you know, obviously my first kind of launch and my first audience was the disability community to some degree. But after I got on Showtime, it really catapulted it to, I made it available, obviously, to a more general audience. And they were just as appreciative and just as moved by the film. And in a lot of cases, even more so, because I think, you know, and this is really, I think, speaking to kind of how sad it is, frankly, that, and we all do it, but, you know, you see a movie poster, you see a trailer, and we immediately brand it and label it one way, or you know, it, genres otherwise. But you know, if you see, God forbid, you see a disabled character in the trailer, all of a sudden, oh, it's a disabled film or whatever. And it's, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it's tragic because it doesn't a lot of them don't reach again a more general audience, and they should, because frankly, at least from my perspective, those are the people that should see those films.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and speaking to, you know, the advocacy of the film, you know, yeah, I mean, those, you know, the general audience really is. And look, we know, I'm sure you know as well as I mean, 20% of the population, certainly in America, I'm guessing internationally, are disabled in some way. I mean, 20%. So, you know, this is... these are themes that need to be seen, and they need to be represented in film. But again, I think what's been really, really gratifying is that the feedback, you know, I get these emails, you know, when it airs on Showtime or someone stumbles on it, you know, who has no ties to the disabled community. I get these amazingly thoughtful emails and feedback that it just blows them away, you know, and what's really gratifying is that, well, two things. One is they just love the love, you know, that's represented in the film. But more importantly, and I think what's really gratifying, is they all go, wow, your sister was just like me, you know. And there's a lovely saying going around the community, the disabled community right now, that we're more alike than different. And it really is a wonderful saying, because that's it, you know. And that was my job, I think, as a brother and as a filmmaker, to just get my sister in the room so people could appreciate her, not from afar, not stereotypes, not labor, but just appreciate her as a human being. And that's what's so gratifying as a filmmaker when I hear that, she's complex, she has the same love, she has the same, you know, the same sexual desires as I do. I mean, all these things, you know, they didn't think or assumed otherwise. And to shatter those is just, you know, fantastic, as you can imagine. So that's a very long-winded answer to your first question. But, anyway, I hope that answers your question.
It totally does, And I'm getting to this a little bit later, but just I do think that it advocates so well in that way, and that it's such a personal story, and that we see her the way you do. I'll get back to that. But I have another question around the filmmaking. So in my very limited knowledge of documentary filmmaking. I know editing is a big deal. So I'm curious, how much footage did you have? Because this went back to early childhood and all the way up to a few years ago. So was there a lot to get through with that?
Yeah, there was, you know, just to fill your listeners in, you know, the film, I don't reinvent the wheel in any way, shape, or form. I, you know, my film is very chronological. It takes us from our very early childhood, as you mentioned. And I was very, very lucky because my dad, though not a filmmaker, somehow, I'm not even sure, had a Super 8 camera. He took about, I think I had transferred about 44 minutes that he had on these little, you know, Super 8 reels that are about 3 minutes long. And of the 44 minutes, probably, I don't know, maybe 35 to 40 minutes were just complete, you know, turds. You know, there was nothing to use, you know, it was just all these flare outs and just, you know, just little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But I was able to salvage about 3 to 4 minutes of just really golden stuff. And so I built the foundations of the film around what I had, and I wrote to that. And I was very lucky because it really grounds the film. It really creates a foundation of the film. And, you know, I think everyone, aesthetically just finds Super 8 stuff so nostalgic and so, it just lends itself so beautifully to any film, but certainly documentaries. And so it really, really grounds it, in that way. So I had to call through, I guess in total of all the footage that I took personally of my sister, it was about 130 plus hours. And then there was about 5,000 still photos. And so yeah, I mean, you know, documentarians, you know, I think some, I mean, you know, look, like every creation, there's different ways of going about it. But the way it happened for me was I had to look at everything I had. So in other words, I didn't really shoot with intention necessarily. I didn't really shoot with a story in mind. I just shot things that intrigued me, things that, you know, performance, whatever my sister was doing. You know, I just shot very randomly, a little more intention as I thought about making a documentary, quote unquote. But so I had to really build the story and what I wanted to say in post and through the editing process, which you alluded to. So, you know, I liken it to a huge pedestal with a massive piece of clay on top of it. Yeah. And for a very long time, it just looks like a big, massive piece of clay that you just keep kind of, you know, pushing around. And, you know, I joke all the time when I first started, I had this huge roll of paper, like that stuff you see in preschools and kindergartens, you know, the big roll of paper that, you know, 2.5-3 foot wide and as long as you unroll it. And so mine was about 10 feet by 3 feet tall. And I had a big Sharpie and I had all these themes and these things I wanted to address and talk, you know, just you name it. And it looked like a giant ink blot, you know, like I think a psychologist would have had a field day, you know. But yeah, it was a lot, you know, I'm not going to lie. It took me a long time to figure out exactly what I wanted to say. And, and you know, I held on to a few things, you know, these little, I suppose, these little filmmaker sayings and, you know, they speak to, you know, don't tell, show. And so that was something that ran through my mind. You know, it was also, you know, the filmmaker saying of, you know, how ultimately do you want, how do you want that for audience to feel when they're done watching the film? What is it that you them to walk away with, what message? And so a lot of those things were kind of running through my mind throughout the whole process. So but I think different, you know, for me, I suppose, than most filmmakers, I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. I guess the best way to say it is I had to actually learn to edit. And so, you know, because I had so much footage, I knew that it was going to be financially brutal and just not possible had I hired an editor, you know, for $1,000 a week to call through all the footage. So so I realized, you know, very early on that I'm gonna have to figure this out myself. And so and this is for your filmmaker fans, you know, this a little sidebar story. I went to Apple's one-on-one at the Apple store here in Los Angeles every week. It was the best $99 I ever spent. Nice. I went every single Friday for an hour to the Beverly Center here in LA. And before the iPhone blew up, you know, so this is about 2007, just about the time the iPhone came out, all the one-on-one guys were still teaching pro apps if you wanted them to. Mm-hmm. You know, you had questions about Final Cut Pro, which is what I edited on. You know, that's what I did. I went every Friday. I worked with this kid, Ram, who's still a good friend of mine 10 years later.
Nice.
He was just a young kid who worked there. And I said, I'm working on a documentary. And every week I would come in with different questions to learn to edit. And so that's, you know, again, it was the best $99 I ever spent. I spent a year doing that. And by the end of that year, I felt confident enough that I could execute, you know, enough to make this film in some way, shape, or form. Again, for a long time, I wasn't sure it was going to be a glorified movie. But, you know, I sculpted the clay and and eventually found success.
Oh, that's incredible. Was it more difficult to edit, you think, because you had a personal connection to what you were editing?
Yes and no. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's absolute truth to that. To the degree that, you know, you lack any and all objectivity, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think someone that came to this with fresh eyes and lack of emotional connection, you know, would probably be able to see things a little easier, a little clearer. Mm. On the flip side of that, though, I knew that my story was very personal, and I knew that this is something I needed to do myself, and I knew that the intimacy is there, and the spirit of Kelly, you know, I just knew that there was things that I really needed to play with for a long time. And so I think even if I had hired someone, I suppose, I probably would have been a horrible collaborator, you know, because I think I would have second guessed everything for the first year, you know, you know, what about this? And again, back to money and paying someone, it wouldn't have been possible, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I really needed that time to just play with it and mess with it and emotionally come to grips with it. So there was a lot of that. You know, really, I think ultimately it was also a very personal journey for me, not only as a filmmaker, but just as a brother. You know, I'll get this out of the way now just for your viewers, but it is a spoiler alert. You know, my sister passed away in my post-production process. And so that was a huge variable to the journey I was on as a filmmaker. So I had to shelf the project, or I did shelf the project for 2.5 years. And emotionally, just didn't know how to get back to it. Until, of course, that little voice on your shoulder says, you know, you got to finish this journey, this chapter of your life, and tell the story. And so ultimately, I did pick it back up, obviously, because we're talking about it now. But, you know, so that was a big part of the whole journey for me, not only as a brother, but as a filmmaker, and going, oh, my, you know, what do I want to say? And then, of course, I had to handle death and dying in the film. So that was its own challenge, as you can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the first half of my interview with Brian Donovan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will have the next half of this interview next week. So please return and have a listen to that. In the meantime, you can stay tuned to Facebook. We are at Arthouse Garage for fun news, movie news, and updates, as well as Twitter at Arthouse Garage, Instagram at Arthouse Garage, and Stardust at Arthouse Garage. Catch up with me on Letterboxd. I will link that in the show notes. And feel free to email me. That is Andrew@arthousegarage.com. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.